Hello and welcome to the Hotchkiss & Wiley Q3 2021 High Yield Market Update. My name is John Hossey, and I'm joined today by Patrick Meighan, Portfolio Manager on the High Yield Strategy. Today, we will be providing an update on performance during the third quarter and a review of the high yield market more generally. Before we begin, a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of October 15th, 2021. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, Hotchkiss & Wiley reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. So Patrick, our high yield strategy slightly underperformed the ICE B of A High Yield Index during the quarter on both a gross and net of fee basis. Can you talk about some of the key performance drivers that occurred?
Sure. First of all, John, thank you for setting this up, and everyone, thank you for listening to the podcast. The third quarter, from a market perspective, the broad market returned 94 basis points for the quarter, so that's 3.76% annualized, which we would characterize as very coupon-like, which is pretty consistent with our view in the high yield market. Our performance in the quarter, we underperformed both the broad ICE B of A High Yield Index and the BB single B benchmark for the strategy. And from a rating perspective, our underperformance was driven primarily by our overweight exposure to CCC and lower rated securities. We've been reducing, and I think in the quarter we reduced our CCC exposure by about 180 basis points. So we've been reducing CCC exposure, but that remaining overweight, we're about 4 points of the portfolio in CCCs, is what drove the underperformance, again, from a ratings perspective. From an issue size perspective, the underperformance is really a function of mid-cap credit selection. And there were actually three credits, Bed Bath & Beyond, WinMac, and PBF Energy, that were the primary underperformance drivers in issues between $500 million and $1 billion. And we've gone through and looked at all of the issues, touched base with the analysts on these three securities, and in all three cases, we continue to hold our position. And then lastly, from a sector perspective, we had strong outperformance in energy, about 20 basis points of alpha, offset by about 30 basis points of negative credit selection effect in basic industry. And what's happening there on the energy side, our restructured equity, or what we call workout credits within energy, continue to perform very well. And so that obviously was a big part of the driver on the energy side. And then in basic industry, we have a restructured private equity holding that, while the company is involved in a transaction, we had a negative mark as we reflected the economics of that transaction in our carrying value for that security. Other than those two areas, energy and basic industries, it was a very quiet quarter from a relative performance perspective in our portfolio.
Yeah, it definitely appeared that way. And there's been a lot of talk recently in the financial press around inflationary pressures and just how transitory inflation may be, although transitory is becoming a dirty word these days. Is there an advantage to investing in high yield over investment grade in an environment that exhibits higher for longer inflation?
First of all, a caveat. You know, at Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield, I mean, we're credit pickers. We're not economists. But in fixed income, you have to have an interest rate view because it's central to figuring out where you think we are in the credit cycle. And obviously, where you are in the credit cycle informs our portfolio management decisions. Looking at investment grade versus high yield, the way we think about it is in investment grade, you're primarily taking interest rate risk. And those securities tend to have a long duration, typically about 9 years right now. Whereas in high yield, what you're taking is credit risk with a modest about 4 year duration profile. And so in a rising interest rate environment is typically correlated with an improving or a strong economic environment. And so strong economic environments are very good for credit risk reduction, which is what you're taking in high yield. Now, if interest rates become excessively high to the point where they choke off economic growth, then I think the balance kind of turns, and a rate environment that is destructive to economic growth has an adverse impact on high yield relative to investment grade. But theoretically, most of the time, a rising interest rate environment goes with an improving economic outlook, which translates into reduced credit risk, which favors high yield over investment grade. And then obviously, going back to that duration discussion, high yield has about half of the duration of investment grade. So if interest rates are rising, the interest rate effect is felt less in the bond prices of high yield bonds than they are of investment grade bonds.
Now, stagflation is kind of percolated in the financial press as well. Can you talk a little bit about what you might be seeing there? You mentioned the strong growth environment that we're in. Do you see any headwinds to that growth?
I would say this. I mean, first of all, in terms of where we are today, you've got core CPI running at about 4%, give or take, which is about 200 basis points above the Fed target. And so using that metric alone, inflation currently is above target. And then a couple other data points just to think about. The U.S. employment cost index is running at about 3.5% year-over-year growth and has an upward trend to it, while the actual U.S. employment rate currently at 4.8 is falling. And so it seems to us that inflation is unlikely to be transitory defined as, you know, over the next several months, because employment cost index is, again, on an upward trend. In terms of stagflation itself, and this gets back to the last question that you asked, a stagflationary environment at the margin is probably worse for high yield than investment grade, because you are raising interest rates to check inflation and you're doing it at a rate that is adverse to economic growth. So we do worry about a stagflation environment. That is not our base case, but it is certainly a risk that we think about. Today, our portfolio is positioned about a half year short or underweight, about 3.5 years of duration relative to, again, the benchmark, which runs about 4 years of duration. So we're a little bit less exposed to rising interest rates, but stagflation is possible. It is a concern. It's not our base case scenario. And the reason why it's not our base case scenario is some of what's driving the inflation is, one, supply chain bottlenecks. And we would view those, you know, it may take a while to fix those, but those are temporal. I wouldn't call them transitory because I don't know how long it takes to clear the port of LA and Long Beach, but that's not a structural change in the economy. And so at some point we think it works its way through. And then the other thing, as prices rise and the reopening unfolds, the consumer may become more price sensitive. So today there's kind of pent up demand for vacations and Christmas presents, but over time that pent-up demand is released and the marginal buyer of a good or service will likely exhibit a little more price sensitivity than we're probably seeing today. So as demand normalizes, that should help over time check inflation. So we think rates go higher. We think inflation remains elevated probably for longer than the Fed thinks, but we're not in the camp where we think we are headed to a 1970-style stagflation environment.
Got it. Thanks. And I see that there are zero high yield defaults in Q3, and the last 12 month default rate continues to be very low relative to history. Is this a reflection of many names in the energy space being washed out over the past couple of years?
Well, I mean, first of all, the trailing, what's called last 12 months LTM default rate in the high yield market is 1% versus a 3.4% long-term historical average. The ex-energy LTM default rate in the high yield market is 0.6%. And so energy still has a positive or outsized effect, if you will, on the LTM default rate. Energy clearly was at the center of the COVID-19 pandemic default cycle. I think 20-25% of energy companies went through some form of restructuring. You know, oil bottomed out at basically zero, but oil today is at $80 a barrel. And kind of going to what we were talking about before in the stagflation environment and economic growth environment, we think oil prices are likely to be elevated for a while. The new issue market is now fully open to the energy companies, and that translates into lower default risk because a default is typically a function of an inability to make a coupon payment or a principal payment. And if you can easily refinance existing debt, you're less likely to be in that situation. Another thing I would say with energy is that the high yield energy company CEOs right now are saying and doing the right things, right? They are delevering, they are consolidating, and they are rationalizing CapEx. And so that's another factor. Management doing the right thing with elevated free cash flow levels is another reducer of default risk within energy. And so putting those all together, defaults peaked in the high yield market in the third quarter of 2020, and much of that peak default level was energy driven. Since then, obviously the default rate, I think it peaked at about 7, and again, we're at 1 right now, and also recovery rates improved from a trough of 25%, so post-default recovery rate, back to the 40% long-term average. So our view is that defaults will likely stay low for the balance of this year and through 2022, and energy-related defaults will be at or possibly slightly below the broader high yield average. So net-net, yes, there was a washout. We think we're on the other side of it. Going forward, in general, defaults should be low. And within energy, we would expect, again, based on the factors I talked about, that energy would be a market rate default level and maybe a little bit better.
Okay. And then in terms of your continuing with your outlook, can you talk a little bit about recent changes to your assessment of market fundamentals, technicals, and valuation indicators?
Sure. Happy to, John. First of all, from a big picture, we haven't had any change to our overall assessment of the high yield market. We use a 1 to 5 scale, 5 being very, very attractive, 1 being, you know, avoid our asset class. And our overall assessment remains at a 3 today from last quarter. And then a level below it, we look at the high yield market across 3 areas. How are the fundamentals? How are the technicals? And how is valuation? Our assessment of the fundamentals is constructive at a 4. Our assessment of the technicals is neutral at a 3. And our assessment of valuations is a little bit below neutral at a 2. Basically, things are going well in the high yield market, and that is priced into the bonds as we sit here today. What we worry about in fundamentals is primarily margin sustainability. High yield issuer margins have fully recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic. We all hear about increasing cost pressures and inflation and difficulty in hiring workers. And in that environment, to the extent it continues, it could be harder for these companies to pass through price increases. And if you can't pass through a price increase, you know, it's going to come out of your margin. On the technicals, our primary concern is taper management. The Fed is talking about beginning in mid-November, starting to taper its quantitative easing program. Last time that happened, it was definitely bumpy in 2012 and 2013, and it's a pretty unusual quantitative tool with a limited history of being exercised and therefore a limited history of, you know, okay, what's the best way to taper? And then from a valuation standpoint, our concern, 1, yield to worse are pretty much at record low levels right now in the high yield market. Option adjusted spread, or the spread in the high yield market, is tight today at about 315 basis points off. It has been tighter in other periods, even going below 300, but the history of the high yield market is it can stay around 300 for a while. It has historically has had trouble staying below the 300 basis point OAS level for extended periods of time. And our overall kind of view on the high yield market is what we call a stable disequilibrium. And we think that environment could persist for a while. And what we mean by stable disequilibrium is the interest rates are artificially low. And there is obviously through tapering a plan in place to try to normalize that. That plan will probably take some time and have some bumps in the road. But bigger picture, it's stable in the sense that it will take a while to execute. And so this may not be a typical ideal high yield market, but we think the market is probably going to be in this environment for the rest of 2021 and possibly into 2022.
And within that context, Patrick, our high yield strategy has historically sought out opportunities in SMID caps as a way of generating additional yield. Given the tight valuations overall in the high yield space, are you looking to trim back some of your SMID cap positions at this point?
Well, first of all, SMID, so companies with less than $1 billion of debt outstanding, their spreads relative to large caps, so let's call that the SMID spread, has largely reverted back to its kind of 60 basis point historical level. So the SMID opportunity is normalized. Secondly, our SMID portfolio weight exposure in the quarter went down 3 points to 69% of the portfolio. And we trimmed SMID exposure in the quarter. But as I looked through those SMID reductions, it was really more a function of credit selection in the new issue calendar, as opposed to, you know, an active decision that we don't like SMIDs for this reason or that reason. And so going forward, to the extent that we reduce exposure to fallen angels, which have done very well, and manage the duration in our portfolio, again, which we're about a half year underweight right now, we think that the combination of those two kind of portfolio actions would result in higher SMID exposure. So at the margin, we probably be more likely to add SMID bonds to the portfolio, if for no other reason than most of the fallen angel exposure is large cap, and a trimming of fallen angels, reinvesting proceeds in SMIDs would cause that portfolio allocation to SMIDs to go up.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
The other thought I had on that is just to remind everybody, SMIDs, so small mid-cap bonds, have historically done well in, you know, the first part of a credit cycle. They tend to be more U.S.-centric, and they tend to be kind of more focused in specific lines. So from a kind of macro, where we think we are in the credit cycle standpoint, you know, it's a good time to be in SMIDs. And so I'd say net-net, we plan to stick with the SMID exposure, and there may be up a point, couple points, down a couple points, but that's probably more portfolio management than anything else.
Thanks, Patrick. And then finally, your team recently penned a piece called When the Technical Becomes Fundamental, which is posted on the homepage of our website. Can you briefly explain to our audience what you mean by that title?
Yeah. First of all, shout out to one of our portfolio managers, Mark Kudoff, who really did the heavy lifting and analysis on that high yield white paper. And we started with just looking at and trying to see trends in the new issue market. And what we uncovered in that exercise was a tremendous amount of corporate bond issuance within the BBB and BB corporate bond issuance, bond rating cohorts, not only in 2020, but also in 2021. So going back to how we look at the high yield market, technicals are one of the three aspects that we look at. Technicals include monetary policy considerations, and typically technicals are kind of second order effects relative to high yield market fundamentals and high yield valuations. Because as we talked about earlier, at the end of the day, in high yield, you're taking credit risk, and how the companies are performing, how levered they are, how much EBITDA they're generating, and how they're redeploying that EBITDA, and the valuations in the market kind of dominate. But at some point, technicals can become so significant that they become a fundamental. And our kind of tipping point for that is when that technical impacts how the high yield market is allocating capital. And as I mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of capital allocated to BBB and BB bonds. And obviously within high yield, BB bond is what we're interested in, and that's been the strongest area of new issuance. And a lot of the reasons why that new issuance has been strong is the quantitative easing policies, not just in the US, but globally. And so within high yield, the Fed's quantitative easing policy is affecting how capital is allocated. It's going to BBs. And so now it is a high yield market fundamental. What was surprising to us is that the high level of BB issuance in high yield market has not yet caused a material deterioration in high yield market quality indicators. So there really hasn't been an aggressive spike in CCC issuance, nor has there been an increase in the percentage of gross high yield issuance that's allocated to where the use of proceeds are aggressive, like LBOs or M&A activity. Rough math, year to date, I think about 70% of the gross $400 billion of gross high yield new issuance this year has been, the use of proceeds has been to refinance debt. And that's relatively high compared to history. And so our conclusion in the white paper is that basically the high yield market remains pretty healthy despite this surge in BB issuance. And that data point and conclusion really kind of adds to our stable disequilibrium assessment of the overall high yield market. You know, you should have new issuance normalize, and you should have a technical stop being a fundamental and going back to being more of a secondary consideration. And that'll happen at some point, but that disequilibrium that's in the market today looks like it's going to last for a while.
And again, that newsletter can be found on the homepage at hwcm.com. Well, thank you, Patrick. This has been a great session. I appreciate your time.
John, thank you very much for your time. And thank you to everyone for listening and for your support of the high yield strategy.
And again, for further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926. Thank you.